Hello, I'm Luke Jones. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. We bring people together to hear their experiences. And this time, we're going to hear from residents in Lebanon and also in northern Israel on their experiences of war and their hopes during and after the ceasefire. As the fragile truce continues, we'll hear from residents on both sides of Israel and Lebanon's border about their fears and their hopes for peace. For one Israeli, after 13 months of conflict, some wartime habits are hard to break.
I still sleep fully dressed. I haven't switched to pajamas at night for over a year just because of the situation. You know, if I have to get up in the middle of the night and get everybody out of the house as quickly as possible, I want to be able to do that fully equipped.
It has been just over 10 days since the ceasefire began, and despite some Israeli airstrikes and a mortar attack by Hezbollah, so far it remains in place. The ceasefire was brokered between the United States and France and is essentially a rerun of UN Resolution 1701, the deal that ended the 2006 Lebanon War. That war was triggered by a raid from Hezbollah, an armed group and Shia Muslim political party, which controls the most powerful armed force in the country. The resolution, the deal, ushered in 18 years of relative peace, and you'll hear references to that period from some of our guests later on. On the night of the announcement of the ceasefire, on the 27th of November, my colleague Mark Lowen spoke to two women who had decided to remain in Lebanon's capital, Beirut, throughout all the fighting, despite the many warnings to leave. They are friends, Lean and Leah.
At the time these evacuation warnings were actually being released, the ceasefire was announced and airstrikes began over Beirut and Beirut's suburb and different areas of Lebanon. So this morning it was super different. We saw people feeling all kind of emotions, happy, sad, worried about what's next, relieved, grieving, it's everything. So what you can actually see right now in the streets is cars full of people. You have like around 10 people in each car carrying mattresses, carrying chairs, suitcases. You can just see them going to the south, and it's good to see, honestly.
Leah, how do you feel now that the ceasefire has been announced?
The ceasefire feels definitely bittersweet. On one hand, there's this sense of relief knowing that for now the bombing has stopped and that we can see the people finally going back to the south and they can finally breathe. But on the other hand, it doesn't erase the trauma that we've been living for the past 2 months. Being in Beirut meant constant anxiety because of the evacuation warnings, because of the sound of the drones and the warplanes all night, and this feeling of helplessness because we tried to hold on to some sense of normalcy, even though it wasn't really that possible. For me, for example, more than 11 were, me and my family were crammed in the same house. So every moment felt uncertain. And even now, it's hard to trust that this ceasefire will last, but it is some sense of relief at this time. So while I feel some hope, I can't ignore the collective grief and exhaustion that we're all feeling.
When the 2006 war happened in Lebanon, I was a young child, and I didn't really get what was happening. I was 7 years old at the time. I heard bombs. I was out with my cousins. I used to play in the garden in the mountains, so it didn't really matter. This time, it's different. The first night, the actual like heavy bombing began on Beirut's southern suburb. It was honestly something I wouldn't wish upon my worst enemy. It was so scary. Like Leah said, it's traumatizing.
It's tragic. Like, we had to normalize things that no one should ever have to experience.
Exactly. Like, we had to live normally with the sound of drones. And we had to wait every evening for the Israeli forces spokesman to actually just release the warnings. And we had to watch our capital and our city and the streets we grew up on get bombed every evening. Like, this was something normal. So this was the situation for a few weeks up until the last 10 days, we started getting information of a ceasefire. So we were super excited, but at the same time, we couldn't trust that the international governments and community wanted to actually do something.
Have your family and friends been safe?
Yes, a lot of my family members actually evacuated the city. We've been in the mountains for a few weeks as well. And friends, we spent some weeks all together in the mountains in Mount Lebanon. Once they actually bombed Beirut's southern suburb 2 months ago, we felt like, that's it, the danger is right at our like doorsteps. It was insane. So I really can't describe the feeling of just realizing that, okay, I'm in danger, I have to flee. Imagine we had an emergency suitcase with our passports, extra cash, extra clothing that we had. right next to the door just in case we need to flee our houses at any time. The last few weeks were hard.
And Leah, you're a student. I presume your studies have been very disrupted by this.
Definitely. I mean, we had to try and continue studying. Everyone had online school or online courses for their universities, but it was hard. I mean, definitely my grades fell, kind of slipped. They're not the same anymore. But I feel that that's not something I can care about right now when I have just gone through something this hard.
Can I ask, do you now believe that the ceasefire will hold? Do you have belief that you can start to rebuild your futures, Leah?
I know that we've gone through this in the country many times, but we really didn't need this right now. So it's going to be very hard to continue from here. We have no idea what our future holds, but we cannot do anything but hold on to hope.
Leah and Lean in Beirut. Lebanon is bordered by Syria to the north and Israel to the south, several hundred kilometres away. Across the border to the south live Israelis Sara and Hillel in the town of Naharaya, which is just 10 kilometres from Lebanon. When Mark spoke to them before this ceasefire was in place, this is what happened.
Sorry, we have a siren. We have to, and we're just going to go into my protected space. Sorry.
We're under rocket fire.
Are you both
okay? Yeah, sorry, we might lose...
connection, yep, just one moment.
We might lose connection, I'm not sure.
Just explain what you've had to do there, what the protected space is.
There's rocket fire in the area and we've just entered our safe space, our communal safe space with our dogs and our neighbours.
This has become part of our... our daily routine, unfortunately.
No, it's okay. It's so just a bit noisier here now. We're all together.
It's one communal space you have, Sarah, for several different houses?
Yes, there are about 20 apartments. Our stairwell is internal, so it's considered a safe space.
To find out how things have changed since the ceasefire, my colleague Krupa Pardee brought Sarah and Hillel together again, along with Shelley, who's a teacher and who has stayed in the border town of Shlomi throughout the war with Lebanon. The first voice you'll hear is Hillel.
It's kind of an odd feeling. There's obviously a sense of calm in the area now that the ceasefire is in place. But generally, because of the situation that has been happening over the last year, there's obviously a sense of stress and I suppose a little bit of concern. So I don't think everyone's quite back to normality. We do kind of feel a little bit on edge, obviously, because these things are very, very fragile. And the situation is obviously very, very sensitive that anything could, you know, set it off. It's a little bit of a tinderbox. We're all a little bit on edge, but at the same time, we're hoping for the best.
Shelley, you also live in a border town, the town of Shlomi, and you've stayed throughout the recent conflict. But have your neighbours and friends, have they returned?
No. First of all, the government told people only from the 1st of February to... if they want to move, then to move. That will be the first move of people. So no one's come back at the moment. I think that a lot of people are very sceptical and people are also in the middle of the year. So most families are not going to uproot their children for the third or second or fourth time this year and come running back. And people are still afraid. People want to see what if this really is going to be a ceasefire, if they can really trust the other side. I stayed, but I don't have little children. I'm not sure I would have stayed if I had little children.
And how have you felt since the ceasefire was announced and has been in place?
At least I can sleep at night, which I haven't done for, I'd say, over a year. It makes it a little bit easier, but I'm still living in a ghost town. Forests of Shlomi have all been burnt down. There's still nothing open. There are no supermarkets. There's nothing going on. There hasn't been a child in Shlomi for over a year. There's nothing. There are people coming to see what's going on with their houses. People's houses have been ruined. There's rats and mice that have gone into the houses and eaten people's furniture and wires. And people have, it's going to cost them a lot of money. And I don't know if they're even going to get any money for the damage that has been done. Shlomi looks very sad.
Hillel, has your home been damaged at all?
Not to such a huge degree. Thankfully, the municipality has been, you know, available and contacting families around the area and asking, you know, hey, look, is there something we can do to help, working with, you know, local businesses to try and get these things repaired to cover at least some of the cost for the damage.
Everybody's still under stress and the feeling hasn't gone away. I'm a high school teacher. The problems are now probably going to start appearing even more so now, you know, because now Maybe when children can breathe a little bit, then we'll see the problems even more than before.
I think things have changed for everyone in that our minds are now hoping that it's going to hold, but yet we're all cautious. You know, we're still wondering if something could happen, and that's how we're living our lives. People, I think, are going out a little more, but not a lot. Our building has thankfully been free of any shrapnel, so we're okay at the moment.
Hillel, Shelley mentioned something that caught my attention. She can sleep at night. And I know that you are a father of three children, aged 15, 12 and 10. First of all, how are they?
They're very resilient and they adapt to situations very, very quickly. It has been a very, very tough year. And the kids have obviously suffered in terms of their studies, in terms of daily life, being able to go out and meet with friends. I think now there's a lot of stress. But slowly but surely, the kids are now getting out of the house, meeting up with friends again properly, visiting each other's homes. My 12-year-old actually got to go out on a field trip with her school, which was great. It got all the girls a chance to kind of go out and meet with each other again and spend time together, you know, have a little bit of fun. So I think there's a sense of being able to sort of move around a little bit and stretch their legs, which is definitely much, much needed. We try to just fill them every day with a little bit of hope. You know, things are going to get better. We have our oldest daughter who's on the autism spectrum. So that's been obviously a little bit of a challenge for her, being very, very sensitive to explosions and to seeing missiles in the sky. But, you know, I've got to say, thanks to her school and thanks to, you know, the support network that we have, she's been doing very, very well. Yeah, I think with a little bit of time and a little bit of therapy, I think everyone's going to get back to normal to some degree.
That's reassuring to hear. But those nights that Shelley touched on, that ability to sleep at night, I wonder how that plays out for you and your family at the moment.
You know, I still sleep fully dressed. I haven't switched to pajamas at night for over a year just because of the situation. You know, if I have to get up in the middle of the night and get everybody out of the house as quickly as possible, I want to be able to do that fully equipped. So yeah, going back to a decent night's sleep, I think that's probably at least a few months away. Yeah, the general stress and the general feeling of safety, I don't think in our household at least hasn't quite returned. And I think it'll take some time. But yeah, we're coping.
And Sarah, I know you know Hillel that you're from the same community. Do you share the same sentiments, that cautious night's sleep that you're getting now?
Very much so. I've definitely felt a sort of relaxation, which I hadn't felt, and I hadn't appreciated it until sort of a couple of nights ago when I actually had an improved night's sleep. These things do take time and years as well. I mean, my daughter-in-law was here in the second Lebanese war as a 9-year-old, and she still remembers and is still very traumatized from what happened then when the, you know, bombs fell intensely for a month and there was no Iron Dome. And seeing her in this conflict, her reactions to the bombing has been very noticeable in that she's recalling what she experienced as a 9-year-old and knowing that it's close by, and her reactions a little more extreme. You can see it in her face. And also her mother was very concerned about her reaction. She is, and I mean, I'm now a grandmother, so watching her as a young mother, she was incredibly nervous to leave the house. And what was very nice for us, they did come over last weekend because of the ceasefire. They thought they would take an opportunity in case it doesn't hold, that, you know, they could come and visit us.
And that's a good time to turn back to you, Shelley, because you're a teacher, and I wonder how your teaching has been impacted, but also how your children have been coping.
Not very well. The percentage of all sorts of problems has gone up a great amount. After the 7th of October, everyone went home and we were taught on Zoom. And then we went back for a little bit, and then only now we've come back to properly teaching. But the children are completely traumatized. They are unable to concentrate in class. I teach the highest grade, which is 5 points in English. And even the cleverest children that were always goody-goodies and listened and did all their homework, I would say most children have they've got lost along the way, you know. It was too much for them. Problems don't go away. When you traumatize children for a year and they're running for their lives every 10, 15, 20 minutes in Nairobi, it got really bad at some stage and all around. And children have know people who've been murdered from the party, from cousins and they're in the army. You can't just expect now this to disappear from kids. It stays. The opposite. I think that now we're seeing more of the problems because children were, everyone was in such a rut trying to survive before they went survive mode. Now that they can breathe a little bit, so then we're seeing more problems. We've got extra counselors at our school. I think it's had a terrible effect on the whole of Israel, from babies, parents, children, old people, you know. People can breathe more, but that doesn't mean that the problems have gone away. I think everyone in Israel wants peace. No one wants to live like we have been living. Nobody. Nobody wants to be running for your life through the streets and afraid to drive down the road or afraid to go to the park with your children. I don't think anyone in the world would want to live like this. But, you know, we're dealing with an enemy that hasn't actually had a change of mind. The ceasefire has come into action, but I don't know. We don't know. We can trust the other side. We don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody can know. That's why everybody's afraid.
Israelis Shelley, Hillel and Sarah, who all live in border towns near Lebanon. You're listening to BBC OS Conversations on the Israel-Hezbollah ceasefire from the BBC World Service. The Israeli military has advised Lebanese citizens not to return to villages in the south just yet as their troops continue to withdraw. But while many have decided to stay away, others have preferred to get back home as soon as possible, including Valentina in southern Lebanon and Ali in Beirut. He returned to the capital to assess the damage to his home.
There is a lot of broken glass. Our front door is broken. There is a lot of missing things, like there is a thief.
So there is significant damage. What is your neighbourhood looking like at the moment?
It's like a war zone. There is no building, all collapsed. Glasses everywhere, damaged buildings. But thank God my building is all okay.
You've described it as a war zone, but your building is still significantly damaged. Would you say you feel lucky?
Yes, it was from the God that my building didn't get any hit or any bombing. Thank God all our people, all my neighbors are safe right now. There is no casualties or something injuries.
Ali, you sound optimistic.
We must be optimistic or we can't live like this a long time.
Valentina, you also left Beirut in September.
Yeah.
You haven't returned home yet.
I returned for 2 days and now I'm outside Lebanon. But of course, when they announced the ceasefire, the second day I returned to the south.
And what were you met with? What was the damage to your home and your neighbourhood?
The neighbourhood, there is a big damage. My home, a little bit, just glasses and so on. There is a big of damaged buildings. There is a problems with the electricity and Wi-Fi and water because of the war.
Are the shops open? Are they supplied?
It's not all available right now because some of the food after the bombings, I mean, and the air pollution, we can't eat anything, especially in the south. Maybe in the Dahiya, the situation is a bit different. Also, not all the shops are open.
And Ali, when you turned the key to your front door, what were you feeling?
I didn't turn the key because there isn't a front door. When I entered my house, I felt relief that finally this war is over. I'm back to my home, back to my memories, my dreams. I can get to my normal life then right now. We're waiting right now for an architect or engineer to see if it is safe to stay in it.
I'm happy I get back to see my bedroom again. All my memories are there. But also a little bit sad because of the situation in the south.
We are, of course, a number of days now into this ceasefire deal. Do you believe it will last?
I don't know, but I guess this time it will be a long-term solution.
I hope, yes. But there is a lot of breaking the ceasefire. Like right now, while talking to you, there is a lot of flying drones.
Oh, there are drones above your home.
Yes, there is a spying drone above my head right now. They are letting my connection to you like...
Oh, that's impacting the connection.
Number.
Okay, and that will explain why the line's gone downhill. Is it normal now, since the ceasefire, that you still have those drones hovering above your home?
No, it's not normal because they are breaking the rules. They said, with the ceasefire, they can't get any drones or any warfighters above our land.
At this point, it became extremely hard to hear our guest due to the interference from drones. But we could make out Ali going on to say that there have been drones and missiles overhead every day since the ceasefire, and that Hezbollah were helping people in the villages. We did eventually get him back on a slightly better line to explain more. And as you'll hear, although Hezbollah is an organisation that many states have designated a terrorist organisation, among many people in Lebanon, it commands a lot of support.
They offered us money for food and shelter, even to construct our building here in Beirut and also in my village. My house in my village costs probably between $250,000 to $300,000. They told us, don't worry, every penny you spend it in your house building it, yeah, we're going to cover it.
And so, Ali, would you turn to Hezbollah before you turn to the Lebanese government for support?
Yes, of course, because in my whole life, they didn't help us anytime, our government, because there is a lot of corruption in my government. So all the money that came from Europe, nations, Arab countries to help us, they shared with us a little bit of them, and all others' fundings got stolen, like every time.
Has your support for the group increased as a result of this latest conflict, in spite of the fact that you have a home that is crumbling and severely damaged, and that your neighbourhood, as you put it, looks like a war zone?
Yes, because in this war, there is nobody stand up with me, and nobody said for me, hi, how are you? Are you fine? Are you good? Do you need something? Except for them. Just Hezbollah came to us, asked us, how are you? Are you fine? Do you need a shelter? Do you need houses? If you want, we can get you to Iraq outside the country if you need. They supported us from the first day. So, of course, I'm going to support them. Get my mom in a hospital when she needed.
And are you confident the ceasefire will hold? In particular, are you confident that Hezbollah will not breach the ceasefire?
I can't be assured it will hold up. But we hope, because there is a lot of shooting missiles from the IDF side. The spying drones, jamming signals, missiles shooting at people, at innocent people, a couple of days ago. So they are breaking the rules from the IDF side, not from our side.
Ali in Beirut, and earlier Valentina in southern Lebanon, where around 10 people were killed during an airstrike by Israel just a few days ago. And there have been exchanges of fire across the border from both sides since that ceasefire was announced, with each side accusing the other of breaking the truce. But as the US White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby said, quote, largely speaking, the ceasefire is holding. I'm Luke Jones, and you've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.